Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Today is Wednesday, May 12th, 2021. My name is Mimi Burris, and like I said, we are getting into this week's episode of Dynamite, which had super high expectations. Did it live up to those expectations? I don't know. Some of the stuff for sure, but we are going to get into all of it right after this. All right, you guys. Oh, voice crack. Something. All right. All right, you guys. Good start. Let's get into this whole thing. It was a big show, a packed show, three title matches on this show, and one title change. And like I said, we're going to get into all of that. But per usual, we will go down the match card. It's just me today, solo show, no Ashley Mann, but I'm sure we will have her back on as soon as possible. Before I get into the actual show itself, I do want to apologize again, guys. I know I said there were some audio problems, but I actually emailed Matt the raw audio, not the actual edited show. And so I don't know if he's changed it yet or updated it yet, but the small audio problems was probably an understatement looking back as to what I actually emailed him. I fixed some stuff up in post, but obviously that's not the one you guys heard if you've listened to it by now. So just want to make a quick apology to you guys for that, because I love having conversations with Ashley about wrestling. I love being able to record these podcasts about wrestling with you guys, and I would hate to be listening to a show that I enjoy listening to and have the audio be a hindrance upon that. So just wanted to quickly get that out there and say that hopefully that will never happen again, and I will do my best to make sure we have tip-top shape quality to the best of our ability here on the WWE podcast. And like I said, that quick plug, or that wasn't a plug, I guess, but that quick statement, and now moving on to another quick plug, just want to plug Patreon per usual, guys. You know the deal. $1 a month, completely ad-free, all these shows. If you're not signed up yet, I don't know what you're doing. Put your big girl pants on, big guy pants on, and go sign up for Patreon, $1 a month. There's also a bunch of other tiers. If you sign up for the Raw tier, you get this exclusive show with Matt and Anthony DeMarco, The What Ifs. Sounds really cool. Sounds worth $10 a month, along with all this extra content and ad-free stuff. Patreon is popping right now, guys, so go check it out. And I'm done talking about that. Infomercial is over. And let's just get into Dynamite this week, because like I said, a whole bunch to talk about per usual. And I think looking at this card, you know, before the actual show, I was so hyped for this. I had to make sure I was watching it live. Like, I was super excited for the show. Pay-per-view quality, almost, in my opinion. And really some great booking to lead to where we are at right now, and just exciting matchups. And honestly, for the most part, guys, I was pretty disappointed. That's not true. A lot of the time, I was pretty disappointed. I don't want to say for the most part. More than I should have been. I think every wrestling show is, no pun intended, allowed to have its highs and lows. But probably what makes a better wrestling show is that there are more highs than lows in the show. And this show, I don't know, we were pushing it at the very least. But Without going into any more overall stuff, let's just get into the nitty-gritty and start with the kickoff match here for Dynamite, which was the IWGP U.S. Heavyweight Championship match, Jon Moxley versus Yuji Nagata. Yuji Nagata is 53 years old. I wrote a note about that because I heard it on commentary. I think Jim Ross said it. Like, that's, I love that he says, I want to be wrestling until I'm 70. That's like Jon Moxley style. So I thought that was really, really cute. And I mean, the guy looks great for 53. He's no Goldberg, but he's a way better wrestler than Goldberg ever was at probably 30. So just wanted to make a quick mention about that. Shout out to Yuji Nagata, 53 years old, absolutely tearing it up, because this match was hard hitting, and probably the best match of the night, and subjectively at least. So your guys' quick recap, we get Jon Moxley entering with Eddie Kingston to Wild Thing as his entrance music. I love that. Match starts, they have a face-off, some shoving, some forearms back and forth, which is a very common theme throughout this match. Crowd sounds awesome right off the back. Moxley hits a diving knee strike on the outside and then takes control of Nagata inside the ring. Nagata reverses the double axe handle off the top and hits an exploder out of the corner. Nagata fakes a dropkick up top and then hits Moxley with a basement dropkick. They go back and forth with forearms again, but Moxley avoids the boot into a German, hits him with a big lariat, but Nagata kicks out at two. Nagata with an avalanche exploder off the top and a kick to the head for another near count. Moxley goes for the sleeper on Nagata, but he counters it into an arm breaker, which looks brutal. And Moxley gets to the ropes, and then they trade forearms again, over and over and over, until Moxley, out of nowhere, essentially hits the paradigm shift for the win. And then they have an awesome moment of mutual respect, you know, bowing after the match. And so, yeah, guys, this was hard hitting. You know, Moxley even got cut open, I think the hard way, on his cheek at one point, probably throughout all those forearms. Stiff, stiff work, and I know Nagata is famous for that. This match was not going to be your five-star classic by 2021 standards by any means. Really fun, though. Just like a nice, I've talked about on this podcast before, like AEW does a great job of being a great buffet of wrestling styles. So you get like the Frankie Kazarian Christian match, which is a great example, and then you get a Rey Fénix Kenny Omega match, or a Rey Fénix Pat and Pac Pack Pac. I don't know why I said it like that. A Rey Fénix and Pac match versus anyone. You know, you get a good mix of a little bit of everything. And this was definitely, I don't know, the meat and potatoes, man. Because this was rough and hard-hitting and awesome. So I really liked this match overall. Obviously, it wasn't much in doubt that Moxley was going to win. But I still really enjoyed it nonetheless. Yuji Nagata, I'm a fan. You know, I'm a fan after this match, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'm not a, you know, New Japan Pro Wrestling or really anything outside of a lot of North American wrestling programs. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. I'm not a connoisseur of wrestling a lot outside of North America. Let me put it that way. I see my thing from time to time, but I am not nearly as cultured in the wrestling world as I would like to be. And coming out of this match, though, Yuji Nagata got another fan, which I'm sure he doesn't need, but has another fan in me. I thought he put on an awesome performance. Like I said, guys, the man is 53 years old, and I would have never guessed that by the way he moved around the ring and the way they hit each other in this match. They did not hold back, and this was just a fun start of Dynamite. I really enjoyed this. Really small detail, but I love the respect at the end of the match. Like I mentioned, I said, you know, in the promo last week, how Moxley mentions that he doesn't respect anybody in that ring. But then after the bell, after the match, obviously he's able to show his respect for someone with a legacy as, you know, as big as Nagata's. And it was cool just to see the humility on Moxley in that moment. So overall, guys, this did exactly what it needed to for me. Got me excited for a fun episode of Dynamite, and supposedly, and was hard hitting, and fun to watch. And I mean, again, I can never put enough stock into the fact that these guys put their bodies on the lines for us every night for our enjoyment, our entertainment. And this was definitely that. I was highly entertained and highly invested. So I thought this was a perfect placement as well. I thought having this, you know, in the beginning of the show was really well, because I think if this had been, you know, third quarter hour stuff, I don't think I would have been as high on it, just because a slugging match like this just does better in the beginning of the show. I think it just does better as a kickoff. I can't put words to that. I'm not exactly sure why. I think maybe just the sets the tone or high energy. You know, God forbid this match came off a match that wasn't so good, I think I wouldn't be as high on it. So yeah, I think it benefited from the excitement of the aura of what this Dynamite could have been, and, you know, stood on its own as well. I want to say that. This match was great. It's not a, no, all credit goes to these two guys. It's just, I think the placement of the match played a big part in it as well. All right, guys, so up next we had Cody Rhodes' Double or Nothing announcement. I thought this was going to be another, you know, if you guys listened to the show last week with Ashley, I said, is he going to announce, you know, the ladder match, casino, royale, tag team, flippity-doo-dah, you know, zippity-a, my oh my, what a wonderful day, number one contenders match, that whoever wins the match is not actually going to win the title, because no one ever does. No one yet, guys, has won one of those matches and actually won the title. So it just, it's like, it's as if, the best comparison I can make, and this isn't a great one, but could you imagine if every single Royal Rumble winner didn't win the match at WrestleMania? You wouldn't really put a lot of stock in it anymore, you know? I think about like someone like an Asuka or a Shinsuke Nakamura who lost, really took away from that, you know? And their like debut years, it felt like, on the main roster, and they lost. I don't know if that's actually a true fact or not, but I'm going to go with it because I don't feel like looking it up. So, yeah, that's the best comparison I can make. Or imagine even the people who have cashed in and Money in the Bank and lost, I think it devalues the thing. And so none of those kinds of matches have any kind of value for me anymore. But we are not talking about that right now because that was not his announcement. Thank God it was. We will talk about it later on, though, of course. But it was that Cody Rhodes is going to face Anthony Ogogo at Double or Nothing. He comes out, he gives a very patriotic promo and talks about America and how great America is and the land of the free, and basically, you know, says Anthony Ogogo, dude, you have a visa here and you're getting paid by the U.S. Treasury and you're here trashing America. I did like that line. I was like, you're not here living the England dream or something like that. I quickly backpedaled and made sure he wasn't offending anyone in England, but you know, this is the American dream. So I liked some of this. I thought he started to tread on thin ice when he said blacks and whites couldn't attend the same schools, talking about segregation. He says, my wife will give birth to a beautiful black and white American princess that will have both identities. I want her to know I didn't just lay down under that flag. I got up off my ass and I fought back. And here's where we're going to do the fighting at Double or Nothing. And then obviously he introduces the match with Anthony Ogogo. He's obviously talking about how Anthony Ogogo laid the flag, the British flag, over him last week. He says he will not be wrestling the American Nightmare. For one night, I'm going to pick up a sword that is all too heavy for one night. It will be Anthony Ogogo versus the American Dream, Cody Rhodes. And no matter what was said beforehand, I thought that line tied this whole promo up with a pretty little bow. I really like this, and I don't know if it's just because, again, Cody Rhodes is such a great promo. And I think if he didn't, you know, tidy it up at the end so well like he did, I don't know if I'd be as high on this, but I thought that line really, and the wrestling as the American Dream, Cody Rhodes, like, I thought that really set the precedent for this match and the importance of it. Like, all of a sudden I care a lot more, which is weird because nothing changed about the match itself. But I really, I think the reason I care so much more now is because I'm really invested in who's going to win. We've got Cody Rhodes, who might kind of be getting a little bit of a reputation as burying some of these talent that he beats. And I don't want to say burying, because burying is a very harsh word. That's not really what I mean, but he's treading on thin ice once again, right? Of becoming someone who takes this new talent and goes over them when he doesn't need to. Let me put it that way. And so when you say you're wrestling as the American Dream, Cody Rhodes, and you're going up against Anthony Ogogo, all of a sudden I got in this thing in my gut that said, oh my God, he might win. He might win. And I'm going to have faith in AEW and say that he's probably not going to win, early predictions, right? That Anthony Ogogo is going to take the win and probably put Cody Rhodes out on the shelf for a while so he can go be dad and a good husband to Brandy. So that's my guess. But I'm excited for this match nonetheless. And that's exactly what a promo is supposed to do, guys. Promo. Promotion. Match promotion. Perfectly done. You know, again, I was a little worried at some of these parts in the promo, and especially when you're talking anything about America right now and being proud to be an American and whatever, all this stuff, you have to tread lightly. Cancel culture is so real, and that's a whole nother debate that I'm not about to do on this podcast, but it's real. It's a real thing that people do, nonetheless. And so I don't know. Obviously, you guys have Twitter. I don't. Maybe you know. Not all of you. I don't want to generalize you all. I'm sure a lot of you have Twitter. I don't. You have to tell me how the reception was as you know, in the public, if people were high on this or not, or if any there was any kind of outburst or response to this. But it sounds like he did pretty well with the content he had, and I don't think he treaded over any lines. I just think he got to a point where he got you sitting up and a little bit nervous, at least in my case. But really good promo, and like I said, did exactly what it had to do. Promoted me for the match, and I'm excited. So, moving on down the line. You know what? I take that back. I skipped something. In between Cody Rhodes' promo, I'm sorry, guys. In between Cody Rhodes' promo and the IWGP U.S. Heavyweight Championship match was a quick interview backstage with the Inner Circle. Really only Ortiz, Hager, and Sammy Guevara, because Santana had been arrested for shoving the fork into MJF's head. And essentially this interview was just that Sammy and Hager said that they want another match and that this feud will never be over as long as they are in the same company, and to give them their rematch or they will put them in the grave and turn the Inner Circle the Pinnacle coronation into the Pinnacle funeral. So we'll talk more about that later on, but I did want to make sure I mentioned that that happened, obviously, in between these two things. And so after Cody Rhodes' announcement, we had the AEW World Tag Team Championship match, the Young Bucks versus SCU. Obviously, the stipulation being if SCU loses, they will break up as a tag team. Let's just get into the recap before we start talking about any of this, because I was talking to Ashley during the show. We had some strong thoughts on how some of this was presented, but quick match recap. Probably not going to be so quick because there was a lot of stuff going on in this match. Once again, the Bucks are in some ridiculous gear. You know, they've got $1,000 sneakers on, like the true that they are. But the match starts with Frankie Kazarian and Nick Jackson. Frankie Kazarian slaps Nick in the back of the head, and Nick returns the favor, and then things start to get heated. There's some great tags back and forth with some great tag team action on both the Bucks by SCU. Daniels gets tossed to the outside, and the Bucks take control, and then we go to break. And when we come back, SCU is back in control with some more great tag team wrestling. They hit the Celebrity Rehab, which is a great name. They hit the Celebrity Rehab on Matt Jackson, and they go for the BME, but Matt makes the save for Nick Jackson. The double team from the Young Bucks is too much for Kazarian, and the Young Bucks take control once again. Nick hits Kazarian with a face buster and a super kick to Daniels into the ring post, cutting him open, and just looks at him, like, laughing, and then looks at the camera guy and is like, did you see that, camera guy? I don't know. I think they said it was his eye that was bleeding. Essentially, Daniels starts gushing blood for the rest of the match, which AEW does a lot of blood and guts, no pun intended. Pun actually really intended. AEW does a lot of blood in its matches. I say the first match obviously seemed unintentional. This also seemed unintentional as well. I don't know, but I could be wrong, because it fits so well perfectly into this match. So it almost felt not necessarily necessary, but it added to this match when a lot of the times it can be a little bit too much. So, I mean, again, it's kind of like once you see something enough, you become desensitized to it. That's why less is more. But this worked, in my opinion. Kazarian hits Nick with a great cutter back inside the ring for a near fall. But essentially, the match turns into a 2-on-1 handicap. Kaz makes an awesome double pin after he catches Nick coming off the top rope. Like a double pin on both of them, but they kick out at two. Kazarian has a 3 count and a roll-up, but Doc Gallows has the ref distracted. And then Kazarian looks straight at Doc Gallows and hits Nick Jackson with the Styles Clash. Such a nice touch. That was beautifully done. I love that. Just like the little tidbits. They're not even necessarily details, but just little add-ons that these guys do make these matches so much more exciting. All right, and as things start to wrap up after that, because Nick Jackson blocks the cutter by Kazarian, and Matt hits a pile driver into a knee strike, but Christopher Daniels is back and breaks up the count, dodges a super kick by Nick and hits him with the Angel's Wing, tags himself in, but gets hit with a spear by Matt Jackson, and Matt Jackson starts targeting the bloody eye with a bunch of right hands. Matt points out to Daniels, Matt Jackson points out Daniels is bleeding all over his shoes. I love that. And then we get probably the best part of the match. Starts imitating the drama of the famous and one of my favorite matches of all time, guys. The famous Shawn Michaels versus Ric Flair match at WrestleMania with the I'm sorry, I love you, and a super kick. And I thought that was it, guys. And honestly, I almost feel like that's where they should have ended it. But nonetheless, great touch. And we get a great near fall after that. Then Daniels hits Matt with the best moonsault ever. But Nick breaks it up for a two count once again. And then Matt Jackson sprays the cold spray in the eyes of Daniels and hits him with the bottle for another great near fall. And then obviously we get to the end of this match. And Matt and Nick both hit the BTE trigger for a three count on Christopher Daniels. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of SCU. And the match itself, guys. I thought the match was awesome. Let me break this down, I guess, into parts because I want to make sure I give credit where credit is due. And this match deserves credit because all four of these guys were awesome. Frankie Kazarian, again, to me, MVP. Carried a lot of this match and did a really good job. AEW has such a good job, or has such a cool way of presenting tag team wrestling that's so different from what we're used to seeing, or at least I'm used to seeing, and I almost feel like I'm still getting used to it a lot of the time, but when I can just sit back and enjoy it, I enjoy the hell out of it. So this was really fun. Like I said, I just recapped the whole thing with the great tributes to AJ Styles and Shawn Michaels, and obviously the blood added to it, in my opinion, like I said. Just some awesome, you know, tag team action with SCU, and like, you know, watching it and pretty much knowing that was probably the last time I was going to see it, you know, at least new matches, it made it all the much better. Those guys are obviously, they worked like a well-oiled machine, and it was clear as day in this match. So the match itself, guys, I really liked it. I didn't really have a problem with the ending either. I like the I'm sorry, I love you part, but it is the Young Bucks, and so they have to be snarny, smarmy, whatever you say that, however you pronounce that word, smarmy little heels. And so I was cool with that. The problem I had with this, and I'm going to give Ashley credit once again, because as you guys could tell, we were kind of talking throughout the show. The problem I had with this is once the match ends, they cut immediately to Mox and Kingston destroying the Elite's dressing room. Was this segment bad? No, this was a cute little another backstage segment. I love Kingston tells Moxley to go blow up their bathroom. That was great. The problem was, is then we go to break and we come back and we see a quick little embrace, like a bloody embrace by SCU, and that's it. That was it. That's the big payoff to this story that actually wasn't even really told that well on Dynamite. It was told better on YouTube. Go to AEW's YouTube and you'd probably be a lot more invested in this match if you watch Elevation and whatever the other one is, Dark and Elevation and Dark Elevation and whatever they all are. The Road 2 was awesome. That helped me get more invested in this match. But guys, as a casual fan or someone who just watches Dynamite, I don't know how invested I'm going to be in this, because how invested am I in SCU and this whole stipulation? I don't really know anything about them. So food for thought in that regard. But like I said, the match itself was great. You can tell the Young Bucks love playing heels much more than they do baby faces, or at least it seems like that. You know, the way they looked into the camera and the hard cam and the asking the cameraman, do you think he's okay? Like, just great stuff. So that's all I really have to say about that match. Like I said, though, I want to make sure I make it clear, I didn't have a problem with the match itself. Thought it was really well done by these four guys. Just, like, you just broke up your first ever AEW Tag Team Champions, if I'm correct. Why is this not a bigger deal? You know, versus someone, I think this is my overall problem with this show, and a lot of other AEW shows too. I'm just like getting the thought now. I think AEW spends its 2-hour time, and I assume they're going to get a third hour sooner rather than later, but it spends its 2-hour time on Dynamite, and gives and prioritizes certain things over other things that shouldn't be prioritized over those things. That made no sense. What I'm trying to say is certain things need more time, and that time ends up being devoted to something that doesn't need the time for it or is pointless. Perfect example, and we'll talk about it later on. Or not necessarily even time, but promotion or whatever. Maybe this isn't a perfect example, but I'm just thinking about, like, the, later on we'll get into it, the Jade Cargill interview and the Britt Baker interview. Why was the whole Jade Cargill thing so promoted when it was, like, 2 seconds long and was so pointless and had no progression, whatever? Again, I'm giving my, showing my hand before we get into that, but versus the Britt Baker thing that got no promotion but was 10 times better and even got more time on the show. I just didn't, I feel like they spend their time, whether it's promotion or actual television time, on the wrong things sometimes. And this was one of them. As much as I love Mox and Kingston and their little segments, it wasn't necessary. Give me, like, let us soak in the sadness and the hatred for the Young Bucks for ending SCU. A great tag team. Like, let us soak in that. Moment of silence, guys, for SCU, because AEW didn't give it. I'm going to give it to you here on the WWE podcast. Moment of silence for the end of SCU. All right, guys, let's cut to Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston blowing bathrooms up backstage. What? What? That's my issue. That's my only issue. So, like I said, great match, and let's just keep on going down the card, because, like I said, obviously next was the whole Moxley Kingston thing. And then we had a Christian Cage interview where essentially he says something about how Taz is fat. And then he is throwing his hat into the casino battle royale because that's going to do a lot. And then Matt Sydal interrupts him and says that he is going to be in the battle royale as well and wants redemption. Obviously, if you guys remember last year, that awful, I think it was a knee injury, but that awful bump, that slip up that he took off the ropes, that obviously really kind of dampened his debut in AEW. Obviously, Matt Sydal recovered perfectly because he's Matt Sydal, but both physically and on actual Dynamite in AEW. But then he says he signed the open contract for a match against Christian next week, so we're getting Matt Sydal and Christian Cage next week. You guys have heard my thoughts on these casino battle royales. I will stand corrected, guys, and I will eat my words on this show to all of you. If whoever wins this casino battle royale actually wins the title, I will eat my words on this show. You 110%. Not going to happen. All right. Next up was the AEW World Championship Eliminator match. Number one ranked Orange Cassidy versus number two ranked Pac. Winner faces Kenny Omega at Double or Nothing. And let's talk about this match real quick before we get into the actual analysis of it. Pac comes down to the ring, sends Death Triangle to the back. He breaks Cassidy's sunglasses, but out of nowhere, Cassidy hits the beach break for a great near fall. I swear, if that's what it was, I was going to feel robbed, but they got me for a quick second. Then hits a suicide dive with his hands in his pockets. Don't you guys worry about the sunglasses, though, because he reaches into those pockets and pulls out a backup pair and puts those on. They battle outside the ring during picture-in-picture, and when we come back, Pac sends Cassidy into the barricade over and over and over, and then takes control inside the ring, hits a trio of shotgun drop kicks, and gets a near fall. And then Orange Cassidy rolls under the turnbuckle before Pac can hit the Black Arrow and gives Pac the thumbs up, and then sends him into the turnbuckle and gets a short little flurry before Pac can shut him down once again with a huge powerbomb. Like, eat that, Brian Cage. Pac, pound for pound, probably the best in AEW. That's a conversation for another time, but that powerbomb convinced me of that, because wow, that looked insane. And Orange Cassidy, props to him for taking that. We go to break again, which seemed like it was only a minute, but we go to break again, and when we come back, Pac is still in control, and Orange Cassidy is being attended to by medical staff. And then Callis, the wonderful Don Callis, comes out and distracts Pac by saying he's taking too long, essentially. And then Kenny hits him from behind with his title, and they both get counted out for 10, both being Pac and Orange Cassidy. And so Kenny says that now he doesn't have to defend his title at Double or Nothing because they're both losers, and he doesn't defend his title against losers. But, of course, to save the day, Tony Schiavone comes out and makes the match a triple threat, Pac versus Omega versus Orange Cassidy. And that was that. And so I have a lot of thoughts on this, guys. This match, let's just, before we get to the interference part, that was something else. But before we get to that, this match would have been way better on a pay-per-view. No ads. Because I think, here's the thing about Pac. Pac is probably one of the most explosive, awesome, high-flying wrestlers in the world. But when he wrestles as a heel, he has to, like, slow it down. And he has to change. He doesn't have to change the actual maneuvers, but he has to change the way he does them into, like, a heel form. And he is the best wrestler at doing it. He's the best at it. The downside of it, though, is that all the ad breaks made this feel like they really only hit 3 or 4 moves on each other total. Because if you don't have picture-in-picture, or if you watch picture-in-picture and you don't really watch it because it's really hard to pay attention, or if you don't have Fight TV and you just don't pay attention, essentially, like myself a lot of the time, my ADD, I can't watch the picture-in-picture and focus that well. I actually watch it better muted, but you feel like you barely watched a match. And the sad part is this is Orange Cassidy versus Pac, and you remember the classic that they had before. You kind of feel robbed of this match. It feels like an under-deliver, but it wasn't, because there was a great match going on. It just kept getting interrupted by the ads. So I'm not going to take away from these two guys. I think they were wrestling a really great match. I just think that the ad breaks kind of ruined what would have been a much better match on pay-per-view. Let me leave it at that. The Callis Omega thing. It was, again, weird coming back from break and not really knowing what had happened and where we were at. But the commentators did a good job of telling the story in that aspect. But still, it was kind of weird. The title shot to the back of the head. Aubrey Edwards, the referee, is right there. She is not that thick. I hated that. I thought it was so poorly executed. And I thought this idea was really bad, too. If I were have booking this, because if I were to have been booking this, there's the correct grammar. If I were to have booking, okay, you know what? You guys get the point. If I was doing this, if I was Tony Khan in this arena, I would have not had this be the way we got to the triple threat. If you want the triple threat, fine. And guys, I'm marked for triple threats. I'll admit it. It's my guilty pleasure. I know most pure pro wrestling fans don't like triple threats and whatever. Go to WrestleMania, the main event of Night 2 this year. That was the best triple threat I've seen in a really long time. Love triple threats. ADD. It works really well for me if they're done well. So I was all for this. This is the problem with this. One, not only are Callis and Omega the new MVP and Bobby Lashley of AEW with the whole, I don't have to defend my title on a triple threat or whatever. Not only that, this, like I said, the execution was really bad. Not only that, but there were so many better ways of doing this. Have this main event and run out of time. Or you don't even have to have it main event. Just have it run out of time. You know, they do that whole time limit thing for a reason. That would have been great. That would have added to this whole simulated sports thing. I think that would have been much better. Especially with the pace that this match was going at. I'm sure Pac would have, like, you could have created a story about how Pac was mad at himself or whatever because he didn't put away Cassidy sooner. He was taking his time. Like, that would have been really well done. I just think this was bad. Or if you were going to do something like this, execute it better and not right next to the referee and make the referee look stupid. I'm so sick of these distraction things and all this stuff making refs look stupid. If you're gonna do it, you gotta do it well. Otherwise, it just looks hokey and bad and takes, again, the believability, guys. I always hone in on believability because that is my number one thing about all this. That's what gets me invested. If I believe in what I'm watching on TV, and so many of these wrestlers are so good at that. It's such a tough job to do, but if you can take me out of something that I know is scripted and make me feel like it's not scripted, if you can, you know, Brian Pillman it, essentially, you've got me. This did the exact opposite of that. So I felt like we almost kind of got, you know, promised this great match, and then we didn't really get to see it. Not their fault, but still. And then we get this crappy finish to the match, and I just so many better ways of doing this. But all in all, I'm excited for the triple threat at Double or Nothing. They've got 1 week really to build it. 1 or 2 weeks? 1 week? I think it's 1 week, right? They only have one. Next week's the go-home show? I don't know, guys. I'm losing track of time. but I've lost track of time way, like years ago, I lost track of time. My point being is they've got about a week to build this whole thing. I'm excited to see what they pull out of this because I have faith in AEW, but this sucked. So that is my thoughts on that. After this, guys, we had the Elite backstage, obviously just the Young Bucks and Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows. And they're in their quote-unquote destroy dressing room. Carl Anderson had a great line where he said, "This is where we praise the Lord. This is where we sit in a circle and praise the Lord." And you guys ruined it. I love that. And then Doc Gallows kind of sounded like Hulk Hogan in this segment. Anybody else catch that? I think he even said brother. Brother. That's my Hulk Hogan impression. That'll never happen again on this podcast. I apologize dearly for that. All right. But the Bucks brag about their win over SCU, and then they challenge the number one contenders, Varsity Blondes, who are apparently the number one contenders. I wouldn't know that because we don't get any kind of Dark or Dark Elevation recap on this show. But they challenge Varsity Blondes, and they make a remark about Brian Pillman, and then challenge Kingston and Moxley at Double or Nothing, I think? It wasn't exactly clear, but something about super kicks. So I assume that next week we get the Bucks going over the Varsity Blondes, but we do get to see the Varsity Blondes, which is great, on Dynamite in a title match. And then we get Kingston and Moxley versus the Young Bucks, and hopefully Kingston and Moxley win the titles. So that's my thought on all that. And then after that, we get the Paige and Dark Order interview. And Alex Marvez asks Paige about his loss to Brian Cage, and Paige basically says that it was going to happen sooner or later. Maybe Brian Cage didn't beat me as much as Taz did. If I was Brian Cage, I don't think I'd be satisfied with that win. And basically says to him, "Why don't you leave Taz and the crew in the back, and for you, Brian, and try to beat me again. And if you beat me, then I'll accept the loss," kind of thing. "But for you, Brian, that's Double or Nothing." And then the genius that John Silver is, the most lovable guy in AEW, says, "Oh, wait, that's the name of the pay-per-view. Did you do it on purpose, Adam?" It's so great. I love their dynamic. It's so, you know, with Paige kind of serious but not serious, and the Dark Order being the great Dark Order that they are. So I love that little segment. Was a joy in a show that didn't have a lot of joys for me. All right, next up, guys, was the Pinnacle Coronation, and what a coronation it was. I'm going to try to recap this as quick as possible, but MJF comes out with a crown. Loved it. Pink suit and the crown. Says that, "I told you I was going to take Chris Jericho's spot," along with saying that he is now the demo god, and tells people not to boo, but to bow, and bow to the Pinnacle, and bow to the biggest draw that pro wrestling has ever seen. Brags about the ratings, brags about Canadian ratings, says Sean Spears is the great Canadian hero, but, you know, obviously alluding to the fact that Chris Jericho is Canadian. And then says the Inner Circle is down two people. Why would they want a rematch? And then says that his answer is no. Then Tully Blanchard gets on the mic and essentially sounds like Ric Flair. Like current Ric Flair. Old man Lacey Evans storyline, make crazy whatever Ric Flair. If you don't watch WWE, God bless you. What I'm referring to is that Ric Flair makes absolutely no sense on the microphone anymore, and it's great when I can even decipher a word or two that comes out of his mouth. The man's old. You know, it's not his fault. That's the vibe I got from Tully Blanchard. So I have kind of what he said, but I'm not even going to bore you guys with it because it didn't make a lot of sense. Just that, you know, we took everything the Inner Circle could dish out, blood and guts, and gives them a bunch of watches. The one thing I had a real problem with in this whole thing, guys, is that he said that, you know, he's talking to the Pinnacle, and he says, "You guys got the five of the greatest looking women that the city has to offer." I'm going to take a deep breath before I dive into this one, guys. I know it seems silly because it's one line, right? And they're heels, and they should be heels, and they should be gross and disgusting and bad dudes. But we're in 2021, guys. A city doesn't offer women. A city doesn't have women to offer. Sorry. Doesn't work for me. I don't care. You can cross as many lines as you want, MJF or whatever, in the Pinnacle. No, sorry, Tully Blanchard, you old creepy man. That's what this felt like to me. A city does not offer women. That refers to women as an object. Women are not objects. AEW is already being, you know, accused of having a really crappy women's division. Well, where was the women's division match on this show? Oh, there was none. Women are not objects. Hated that line. Really, really hated that. Little thing, guys, but it means a lot. It's screwed up. And it shouldn't be said. So I hated that part. It was so pointless, too. It made no sense. Tully Blanchard made no sense. So that got me fired up and just annoyed. And not in a heel heat kind of way, guys, but a heat in whoever let this guy go out and say that. So, yeah, like I said, he gives him fancy watches and says, every time you guys look at that on your wrist, you can go nothing. That was a present from Tully Blanchard, and that's what being part of the Pinnacle is all about. And that's about as much, that's as most sense as I could have made out of what all the stuff that he said. I tried taking notes, guys. I had no idea what the hell he was going on about. And then thank God there's some honking going on in the background, and Ortiz, Hager, and Guevara are pulling up on a cart that has some banner on the back of it. I didn't catch what it said. Maybe one of you guys can tell me, but I bet it was funny. And then Chris pops out of the back of the van with a big arm cast on, and he says, will you give us a rematch, yes or no? MJF declines, and Chris asks again, and MJF declines and spells out no for us, in case any of us did not know how to spell out no. And then the Inner Circle starts spraying the ring with a lot of bit of the bubbly. And this was essentially the classy version of the beer truck on Raw from Steve Austin forever ago. This was the Inner Circle's bubbly version of the beer truck. And then Max, I don't know why I have Max written down. MJF clearly, we're not on a first name basis, guys, I promise. MJF clearly furious, takes the rematch now, says May 30th, Double or Nothing, Stadium Stampede Part 2. If the Inner Circle loses, the Inner Circle has to break up forever. Take it or leave it. And again, we're going to break, there's a lot going on here, so I want to break this down. The actual coronation itself, I didn't like. I thought MJF's promo was okay, not great. Not MJF standards. Tully Blanchard made absolutely no sense. I would have loved to hear more from the rest of the Pinnacle. I don't ever need to hear Tully Blanchard again after that. That just killed it for me. I don't know if I'm alone in that, but I just, it having an old crazy man in your stable doesn't, like, next week, I want MJF and the Pinnacle to beat up Tully Blanchard because he sounded so stupid, and the Pinnacle means you're on top, and Tully Blanchard, that promo was not on top. It was not Pinnacle. So that was my thought on all that. But if it were up to me, and this was actually well done, I would have liked to just have the, you know, have a week of, or at least a week, the Inner Circle, the Pinnacle just gloating. But I get why they had to do it this week, because they're running on a time schedule of Double or Nothing, and they want it at Stadium Stampede at Double or Nothing. I get that. Stadium Stampede Part 2. My thoughts on that. Where do you go from Blood and Guts? You go cinematic, I guess, is the answer to the question. You go cinematic because you can't go anywhere else, because it's Blood and Guts. You can't get any more gory than Blood and Guts, unless you want to have an exploding barbed wire death match part 2. I don't know. You know, exploding barbed wire death match 5-on-5 version. So that's my thoughts on that, I guess, is that where else do you go? So it makes sense, logically. If I was going, I texted Ashley again this, and I said, I don't live near Jacksonville, but I had considered possibly going to Double or Nothing. It was a thought in my head, at least. The minute they announced this, I said, yeah, no, not a thought anymore. I'm not going to a pay-per-view to watch something on a screen for 30 minutes of it. Sorry, I can do that at home. That is how I feel about cinematic matches. Great for the pandemic era if they're done well. Fine. Not great. They were okay. Stadium Stampede 1 is world-renowned. Great. But it worked for its time. I don't think we need another one in your first full-capacity pay-per-view live. That's a little bit weird to me. So yeah, that's my, I don't hate it yet, but I'm just done with cinematic stuff. Why would you put cinematic stuff on your first full capacity pay-per-view show again? Maybe you need time to set something else up, but still, I don't know, guys. I'm done with it. I get it if it's Sting, because Sting can't wrestle anymore, so you had to do that whole thing, but I don't know. I don't know, guys. Maybe one of you feels differently than I do, and you're okay with watching a cinematic match if you're live, but not for me. The only thing I would have been okay with is if I was at WrestleMania and they did Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton in a Firefly Funhouse match, because anything would have been better than that match, but we are not here to talk about that, guys. We're moving on to the best part of AEW, which was this, like, two-minute Britt Baker interview. Basically says that, you know, after a year ago, about a year ago today, Britt Baker had to get surgery on her nose and was out for about 5 months after she lost to Sheeta. Come Double or Nothing, she said, this was a great line, guys. She says, come Double or Nothing, the women's division is going to live on its own when I become its champion. Guarantees a win. And guys, when she does the DMD thing, I do it with her. The DMD. I like point at my computer screen or my TV screen. I love it so much. I'm such a mark for Britt Baker. I don't care. Call me out. I'm proud. I'm a proud mark for Britt Baker. I am praying to God that she wins. And I thought this was a great little interview. I think this was exactly what it needed to be. And then next up, we had Thunder Rosa versus Jasmine Allure. And I take it back. I guess I was wondering, oh, there wasn't a women's match on this show. But don't they hoid a quick two-minute match on here in the third hour. And it was, all I have in my notes, guys, is Fire Thunder Driver for the three count. Because either this was thrown onto the show just so they didn't get criticism for not having a women's match on the show, or this was some attempt to get Thunder Rosa's momentum back after that unsanctioned match. Or it was both. It was bad at both, if that was the case. Thunder Rosa's momentum has died down way too much for the squash match to save anything for me. Guys, they didn't capitalize on anything. Such a waste. Another point proven. Where does AEW spend its time? You know, wasted. Unless there was something going on with Thunder Rosa, wasted her momentum off that match. Britt Baker capitalized on it to an extent. Probably could have capitalized on it more. And I have nothing to say about that. That's all I have to say about that. I don't care about Thunder Rosa right now because they made it. So I don't care. And then Tony Schiavone interviews Jade Cargill. Pretty much all I have on this, guys, is that Jade looked incredible. Say it all the time. But she looks awesome. She says that she handles her own business after being asked about who's going to be her general manager. And she's her own boss. And she's that bitch. And guys, I swear I've seen this like 14 other times on every other show already. I just did nothing. Why was this advertised? It wasn't even live. If it was live, why don't they do it in the I don't know. This was so pointless. This was not worth analysis. Just pointless. Pointless. I talked about this a little bit before already. But so let's just move on to our main event, guys, which was the TNT Championship match. Darby Allin, the champion, with Sting, of course, versus Miro, the challenger. Darby Allin has this artsy promo Darby Allin thing before the match. And then we get Miro coming out. He looks like a beast. And he attacks Darby before the bell. Screaming, am I underwhelming to the camera? I love that. That was a great little part. But just starts beating the hell out of Darby Allin before the match. And Sting does nothing the entire time. Because that makes sense. You know, guys, when it's Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page, Sting's got to step in. But when it's Miro just beating him up for no reason, Sting, that's not enough for Sting to get involved. I don't know, what the f*** was that? Here I go with the, I'm gonna have to edit now. All right, Miro hits a kick to the head for a near fall right in the beginning of the match. It was a near fall, although Miro did not think so. He starts celebrating the win, but obviously the ref makes it known that he didn't just win. Darby hits Miro with a pair of shotgun drop kicks and shoves him into the ring post, hits him with a crazy suicide dive, and then goes for the coffin drop, but Miro catches him and hits him with a belly-to-back suplex, and we go to break. During the break, Paige and Scorpio Sky go after Sting. I only saw that because when they showed a replay of it, obviously, when we came back. Because, again, I can't pay attention to picture-in-picture. Let me know, guys, if any of you can do the picture-in-picture thing, power to you. I'm really curious to hear. I think it's a good idea. I can't pay attention during it. Anyways, Miro is tossing Darby Allin around and dominating him when we come back. Darby goes for a sleeper hold with the good arm and selling the injured arm really well. After, you know, a rope escape and a couple other tries to get out, Miro just slams Darby Allin into the barricade with a huge collision to break it. Darby, later on, back in the ring, gives Sting a fist bump and they have this cute little moment. And Miro hits Miro with two stunners and goes for the coffin drop again. But laying on his back, Miro catches him, throwing him up, going for another German. But Darby lands on his feet. Darby gets a bunch of near falls with roll-ups and the code red. And the code red really got me. Talk about a hope spot. But Miro gets Darby Allin in his submission. I forgot what it was called, but gets him in a submission. And we have a new TNT champion. Miro gets I don't know if he tapped out or if I think he just passed out. And after the match, Sky and Paige come out to attack Sting once again, because that didn't just happen during the break. I don't know why they made that happen twice. And then the Dark Order comes out to make the save, which was just pointless, but whatever. Let's just scan on past that. And Miro looks great with the belt already. That's, you know, I have that in my notes, that his gear was matching the belt. Like, chef's kiss, beautiful touch. And then Lance Archer comes out with Jake Roberts and just points at Miro a bunch. So yeah, I don't know what all that other shenanigans was. It was so unnecessary. It was just, would have been nice to just have Miro have his moment. But so, all in all, guys, my comments on this match, I guess, is, you know, the beatdown in the beginning looked awesome. Miro looked like a beast. He is a beast. And Darby Allin is a masochist. So, perfect, you know, it's a match made in fucking heaven. The problem I had with it was so unnecessary. And like I said already, why didn't Sting try to do anything to stop him? And, like it was very much like, after the throw down the stairs and this, it was like too much. Like, we get it. Darby Allin is courageous and can take so much punishment, and he's just superhuman. And isn't he just like a little mini version of John Cena and Jeff Hardy's love child with all this crappy babyface stuff getting shoved down my throat? I get it. I don't need any more. Like, Darby Allin is already injured enough. You don't have to drive it home anymore. Why couldn't that whole thing just have been part of the match? I didn't get that. I just wasn't in the mood for this, like, shoving in my face all this babyface crap. Like, John Cena, Roman Reigns vibes, which might make no sense to people, but if you get it, you get it. I just didn't need that. Miro was awesome, though. An awesome heel throughout this entire match. The way he was pandering to the crowd and the camera. And although with all of that stuff being said, like I said about the whole beginning thing, unnecessary and all that stuff, I will say, by the fist bump with Sting, that little moment, Darby Allin actually had me rooting for him. And not rooting for him, I take that back. That's not a good way to put that. I got it. I got it by then. Like, it didn't feel so shoved down my throat at that point. I was like, I got the story of the match. I was into the story of the match. I still wanted Miro to win. I was still, like, freaking out that Darby Allin was actually going to win, especially during that Code Red. But, like, another stupid roll-up victory by Darby Allin. But no, I got it. And I thought the match was done really well. The actual match itself was done well. I just didn't need all the fluff. It was too much. Too much in the beginning of the match. Too much after the match, like with the Sting and the Page. I don't need Lance. Why is Lance Archer out there? What has Lance Archer actually done in the last, like, 5 weeks? What has he done? He just comes out and points at people and cuts kind of promos that make no sense. Like, what is going on with that? Like, do something or don't. I don't. There is a such thing as bad long-term storybooking. That's bad long-term storybooking. There's no progression. It makes no sense. So, as we calm down from all of that, let's get into next week's matches that have been announced, and do a quick preview of that before we log off here on our AEW Dynamite review show. First and foremost, the Young Bucks versus Varsity Blondes for the AEW Tag Team titles. I think this one is a pretty easy one, guys. Gonna be the Young Bucks beating the Varsity Blondes and then going on to Double or Nothing to face Kingston and Moxley. I assume there'll be some shenanigans with Kingston and Moxley after the match or during or whatever. And then Serena Deeb versus Red Velvet for the NWA Women's title. I don't think Red Velvet's going to win it as much as I would love to have Red Velvet win it, guys, because I love Red Velvet. And she's going to be the best babyface in like a year from now if she stays on this track. But yeah, so that'll be a fun match. I'm really looking forward to that. Serena Deeb got all kinds of experience, and I know Red Velvet is going to learn a crap ton just being in the ring with her, so that is exciting stuff. Next, we got Christian Cage versus Matt Sydal. I assume Christian Cage takes that. Matt Sydal can take another loss, and Christian Cage is kind of on a winning thing going on here. But I'm excited for that, too. I love watching Matt Sydal wrestle, so should be good stuff. And last but not least, we have Anthony Ogogo versus Austin Gunn. I don't know, guys. I think the thing I'm most excited about this is just to see Anthony Ogogo go in the ring. Anthony Ogogo go in the ring next week. I hope maybe we see a little bit of wrestling from him. Or actually, if not, they save it all for Double or Nothing. I'm excited to be talking about that and previewing that next week. But I'm not going to give it away yet. We will get to that. If I've got the wrong date, we're going to be really screwed. No, I think next week is the go-home show. So, all good stuff, guys. Definitely not nearly as stacked of a card as this week. But then again, this was a super stacked card, and I didn't love this episode of Dynamite. So, great wrestling. A lot of great wrestling. Just some of the focus needs to be switched around on this show, I think. And I think that's the best broad overview I can give of all of it. So, with all that being said, guys, thank you so much. It is 11:11 now here in Eastern Time. Seems like a beautiful time to end this show, so we are going to do just that. Thank you again for tuning in. If you're not subscribed on Patreon. If you're not subscribed, don't subscribe on Patreon. I don't know what Patreon is. If you're not subscribed on Patreon, get Patreon it and subscribe, and have a wonderful rest of your week, guys. I will talk to you next week, and maybe, just maybe, we'll get Ashley back on here to review Double or Nothing. So, some exciting stuff ahead, and I will talk to you guys next time.